Oh, snaps.
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Well, hello, raw feeders. I'm Dee Dee Mercer Moffitt, CEO of Raw Dog Food and Company. Trying to figure out my microphone. We're friends like my friend Dr. Judy Jasek. Well, she doesn't let friends feed kibble. How are you on this Wednesday?
Doing great down here in Tennessee. Y'all, I hear you guys in Colorado just had a snowstorm.
We did. And more snow coming again this week. So, you know, Rick and I do this thing. It's like, how many snowstorms do you think it's going to be before it ends?
Yeah.
He's like, well, three more. And I'm like, because we cannot. It used to be, okay, I'm going to put my flowers out. I'm going to bring out all my flowers from underneath the crawl space and in their growing space that I put them under for like 7 months, right? Uh-huh. After Mother's Day. Oh, no. Now it's 1st of June.
Memorial Day. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Some of those Mother's Day snows out there. Yeah, I've got almost all my planting done. Because here, by the time you get like further into May, it starts to get warm. So you want to get your plants kind of established. So matter of fact, I'll have to send you. We just did a video this weekend, updated video at the place where we walked around and videoed the food forest and the chickens. And Chris has just done all the mowing. So we had it all like looking pretty good. So in another week, it'll be all shaggy again. So because everything... it grows so fast. It's Tennessee. You get a ton of rain and it's humid. So things grow, but yeah, I'm like, it's my garden's in and growing. And, I'm really loving that because I love the gardening and it's really fun. The growing season's probably almost twice as long as it was in Colorado. Cause I don't think we really get a big risk of frost here till November. So you can actually plant again, like, you know, July and August are hot like it is everywhere. But then as you get in towards the end of August, you can actually plant some things again and get like a fall crop, like greens and stuff like that. So,
and kind of fun. Did you put in the copper wiring on the wood dowels?
You know, it's interesting you say that because I'm experimenting with that. I hadn't done it yet, but I put in some fruit trees. And my peach trees are just like everybody else is like leafed out and looking, you know, they're just little trees. It'll take a few years before they produce anything. But the peach trees, like they had little blossoms, but this is still when we still get some cold snaps at night and the blossoms went away. And now I'm waiting for leaves to show up and they're just really not. So I thought I've got some wooden dowels with the copper wiring on it that I used last year. And so I put a couple of those out by my peach trees. So I'm going to see if it helps them. So I'm going to start experimenting with that. See if that areas that maybe look like they need a little extra help, or they say it helps repel pests too. So might try it for that.
Oh, wow. So you won't have any people coming around.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. okay. Well, that's very cool. Yeah. I'm going to do that this year as well. I'm going to actually get some copper wiring, put it in and see if my flowers do better. And Dr. Jasek and I are just learning so much stuff, new things, very exciting stuff. As you know, we're big on the Bigglesons. We're big on the Bigglesons. And they're opening our eyes up to different ways of looking at health, right? And looking at the blood and kind of understanding what cancer is and isn't. And so we'll pass on that information as we get it. But you guys check it out. See if it resonates with you. Dr. Jasek, I interviewed yesterday the guy who brought the lawsuit against Hill's. And he brought the lawsuit against Hill's because of the dilated cardiomyopathy scam. Remember all that when everybody was saying, my dogs need grain. My dogs need grains for their heart. And then Then they went to the vet, and the vet put him on the Hill's diet. You've got to listen to that podcast, because he really reveals how this happened and why it happened and who was at the forefront of it. And lo and behold, Tufts University with Dr. Lisa Freeman is at the forefront of this. And Dr. Lisa Freeman, and he'll explain this in the podcast, is the vet from Tufts University that sent out her information to the veterinary community that suggested that raw food was pathogenic, that it was dangerous. And this is where this whole narrative comes from, that your dog should not be on a species appropriate raw diet. And he said, if you really listen to what she says, it's never that the dog's going to get sick, ever. It's that you might get sick. Mm-hmm. And he said, yeah, I get it. If you like, maybe you're going to pick up your dog's poop and then not wash your hands and, you know, maybe you cook food or something like that. But we've never even seen people get sick. But it's fascinating to me that you can move an industry. He talks about how much money Hill's was losing prior to this scandemic of the DCM, and how much money they made just by putting this information out there, how they skewed the information that they were feeding to the FDA, right? So in this, he says, look, the FDA has these markers, and if they see a 100% increase of information or worries coming in about certain food, then they're going to take a look. And that's what happened. But what he said was, it was like 28 reports versus 14 reports of DCM the year before. But the majority of these reports were coming from where? Dr. Lisa Freeman.
Interesting. I always wondered, like, where did that get started? Because it's so not true. It didn't come from, like, vets aren't recommending this. You know, they're not, they don't have any patients on it. They're not seeing with from their own experience that raw food is unhealthy or that it, you know, can cause heart problems because they're not getting grains. So where did the narrative get started? So that's very, it doesn't surprise me a bit that it came from institutional, you know, university veterinarian, because they get paid off by these companies. And you know, we've known that for a long time, that companies like Hill's funds research at these big universities to get the information out that they want to get out. And, you know, what a brilliant marketing scheme. They put this information out there to the vets, and then the vets, who the people trust with their pets' health, are telling them, and it's still here. We're going to hear this probably for decades, you know, that dogs still need grain to, you know, to have a healthy heart. And then once that gets out to the vets, and it still baffles me though, like, why the vets just don't question information anymore. They don't critically, just like on the human side, they don't critically think. They don't think about, well, how do I know that's true? Or like, it's just, I don't know, like a convenient narrative. They like it, so they latch onto it. But if you think about it logically, like, the majority of people eat meat. You go to the grocery store and you buy raw meat and you bring that into your home and you prep it and cook it and everything. And people aren't dropping dead from that. So why is raw dog food so much more dangerous? It's all the same thing. It's all raw meat.
Because Lisa Freeman said so.
That's what I mean. Like, if they even step back and said logically, well, I go buy, so they know nothing about the industry, but I go buy hamburger at the store and bring it home and I cook it up on the grill and I just make sure I wash all my dishes, you know, closely, and I don't use the same knife for my hamburger that I'm using to cut up my veggies or whatever, you know. Yeah, I don't know. Just doesn't make any sense. But I'm glad he's bringing this to light. It's awesome.
So I heard on a podcast yesterday I have not seen this myself, but evidently there's a guy out there who's doing the raw chicken challenge, and he has eaten raw chicken. I think they said for 100 days or 112 hours. I don't know how long, because he's trying to prove that even if you ate raw chicken yourself as a human, you would not get salmonella.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, how fooled are we, Dr. Jasek? How fooled, how much information about our health, pet health has been just obscured, slanted, just evilly marketed in a certain way? Finding the truth is a little bit difficult, but it you is. Can find it.
Mm-hmm. I'd say the majority of it, but we've been taught in medicine, even a lot of what comes out in holistic medicine, we've been following the Bigglesons, and they talk about, like green allopathy, that a lot of so-called holistic practitioners are really still just throwing herbs and supplements at symptoms. They're not really getting to the root cause. And through following their work, I'm getting a deeper understanding of what really is the root cause of disease in both people and pets. And I've been thinking this for a long time, that it has a lot to do with energy and emotion. Like they say, 10 minutes of joy a day will go a long way to keep you healthy. And I think about our pets and how many pets are, just kind of forced to conform to their owner's lifestyle. Maybe they don't get out and can't do their dog thing, get out and sniff around and be a dog or run around or play with other dogs. They just have limited amount of activity. They're out on concrete or asphalt. They don't get time out. I think time out in nature is extremely important for pets, just like it is for us. That's the one thing I think I've heard from every human medical practitioner I've ever listened to. Every single one says, get out in the nature, get your shoes off, get your feet on the ground. And I think the same thing's important for pets. People say, or breeders will sometimes tell people, don't put your puppy on the ground until they're 4 months old, because I'm like, there's all these diseases waiting to get, that's where they need to be. They need to be down there eating the dirt and
right?
Play the dirt, get to building that. How do you think they build the natural microbiome, getting all those organisms from the soil and all the stuff that they eat? So I think there's a lot of things in just lifestyle that don't cost anything for people, that they could really change, that could really make a big difference in their pet's health. And then maybe we wouldn't see as many, end up with cancer.
Right. Yeah. And, to kind of think about this a little more clearly, what we're learning is, all right, if stagnation in the human body is a big culprit of cancer, right? Because the body's not flowing, right? The blood's not flowing, the vitamins, the minerals, the nutrients that need to get to certain parts of the body, it is being blocked off. There's stagnation there. And they describe it as a big tree limb in a flowing river, right? That gets stagnant. So what you just said is, if you're just throwing things at that stagnation, you're not really helping it, right? You've got to open up those pathways. You've got to make sure that there's great flow, there's great structure in your body and your dog's body. That's just one way to think about it, right? When you say, if you're just throwing things at it, are we really dealing with the root cause? And that would be no. And what they say is the root cause is the damn limb or the tree thing. You've got to remove that. Now, that's an extra step. How do we help people, remove that? But it reminds me of this question that I got just yesterday, Dr. Jasek. So I wanted to run this by you because we don't give medical advice. We are educators. Dr. Jasek can give you medical advice, and that's why you can go to her website, ahavet.com. Here's the question. And this is why she says that I work with Dr. Jasek, because I'm not a doctor. But she says our 18-year-old cat, it's been eating a raw diet since 2012, is beginning to develop kidney decline. He is 18, of course, but the vet wants us to feed a special vet-sourced food. And she says, not going to happen. But she says he mainly eats chicken PMR. Now, I will say that the cats, guys, they still need variety, 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 okay? Mm-hmm. But she wants to know what she could add to help reduce the kidney stress. She wants to know, can I add greens or, you know, can I add love bugs, which is a probiotic? Yeah, I don't see that that's really the case. I would say the question for me, Dr. Jason, and probably from you too, is, well, what does that mean, kidney decline in your cat? What does that mean? What are the symptoms that indicate kidney decline? And we do have a elevated liver enzyme course that we're getting ready to present with Dr. Jasek. Well, what would you say about that? Would you ask that question too? I mean, mm-hmm. How are we even determining that?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I can assume there's probably blood work done. But, you know, to me, if an 18-year-old cat has slightly elevated kidney values, especially if they're eating raw, because we know that pets on a raw diet will have, like, especially the BUN, the measure of the urea in the blood will be a little bit higher. But to me, in an 18-year-old cat, okay, their kidneys probably aren't working as well as they did when they're two or three. And those blood values, remember, those are just averages. They just take a X population, probably all like kibble fed, you know, pets, and that are, you know, that they consider quote unquote normal, and develop those normal ranges. They're just averages. So it doesn't mean that if your pet's a little bit outside of those normal ranges, that there's even a problem. And I see all the time, I see, you know, these cats that are in their later teens, like the kidney values, BUN and creatinine mainly, will pop up a little bit. And like, you know, I don't change my nutritional recommendations. I think it's important to really be paying attention, you know, being really diligent, like rotating around, adding in some extra organs just to, you know, feed them some kidney. You know, I think, you know, give the nutritional building blocks for healthy kidneys. I think cats, because they're obligate carnivores, I think they can tolerate even, you know, like more organ in the food than dogs, even like 25%. I mean, I think you can increase, you know, from add in addition to the blend, get the organ only blends and add those in. That's another way to add in a different protein too, is if you're feeding chicken, get some beef or pork organ. But if the cat would eat some of the other proteins, you want to be rotating that around. So it would depend on, first of all, like on the level, like you said, how did they determine that? And then making sure they got good nutrition. There's a Chinese herbal blend I use sometimes. But I think one really important thing too is hydration, making sure they're getting enough fluid. Cats are not by nature big water drinkers. So adding in a little extra water or broth in with the food to make sure that they're staying hydrated. Because one of the things that happens is sometimes the kidneys don't concentrate the urine as well, which means that more of the water they intake, they pee out. That's why they sometimes drink more and pee more, because their kidneys just aren't reserving that water. So making sure they're getting plenty. And then eventually, if that process goes on or advances, giving subcutaneous fluids, just fluids underneath the skin, which can be done at home, simple procedure. That can sometimes help keep them hydrated too. But I don't think you need to panic or do a whole lot. Now, again, it depends on how is the cat acting and what were the lab values, how much intervention we might take. But for those values to go up a little bit, an 18-year-old cat, to me, that's normal. And I do consults like this all the time. I'm like, you know, there's always a stage. Oh, my cat's got stage 2 kidney failure or whatever. And these values are up just a little bit. Like, to me, it's normal. Like, yeah, there's some things we could do for support, but I think it's more important that we're doing really good optimal nutrition. Yeah, raw is great, but rotating the proteins, adding in the extra organs, maybe getting them to eat a little algae or something like that, that just to round out the nutrition a bit, would be a good idea. But Yeah, you may not even need to do anything, and certainly don't do the prescription diets. They, because they will go downhill then.
Right. And thank goodness that this pet parent knows better. But you guys, cats really, they do need a variety. I've heard some vets say, and even they're kind of in the maybe more on the holistic side, but they're like, no, cats don't eat beef because they can't take, a beef animal down.
They don't kill cows,
They don't
right?
kill cows. I'm what? Well, the mountain lions would and could,
Yeah.
right? And that is what your cat is. I get it. Their size determines what they're going to take down. But,
And you can't find like mouse blends, like
you
which they
used
would
to be
eat.
able to.
Yeah. But for some reason that's that they don't have that. I don't know if they can't get enough mice. I think they could, I don't know, somehow.
Tiki cat. Remember, they took them
Mice.
down.
Yeah.
That was a good blend for cats. But you could, like you said, add some kidney, do the organ blends, add those in there. Feed kidney. I mean,
Yeah.
yeah, there's so many things you could do, but we do get very hung up, Dr. Jasek, on the traditional ways of determining that someone is sick, or determining that your organ's failing, or determining this, or and many times what we're learning is that probably isn't the thing. But it's hard to snap people out of that and say, well, first of all, we're going to look at how the cat's acting, right? It
Right.
and 18's a great, I mean, I think cats can live all the way up into their mid-20s, but again, are we doing flea and tick? Are we doing heartworm? Are we
Right.
doing things? And one thing that I am really starting to understand, Dr. Jasek, is this. Yes, our bodies and our animals' bodies, if they are healthy, can overcome some of those toxins, right? We live in a toxic world, therefore we're always adapting. We're adapting to our environment, and our environment's all around us. However, when you are going through a healing crisis or a healing phase, what we're learning now is that's why you want to be as strong as possible, right? Because it takes a lot of energy to heal, whether that is from cancer, whether that's from kidney disease or whatever. So we don't want to be behind the eight ball with all of these other toxins keeping us from being as strong as we can. That's one. The second thing is, are they really doing anything? And that's really where you and I are in this research at the moment. It's like,
They make a lot of money for the companies that make them,
well,
and
sure.
the veterinarian selling them. So they're but I think that's about all they do. I think as far as the pet sales, they do is poison them.
We're learning a lot about pleomorphism, right? So pleomorphism is, okay, in the body, we have these things, right? Call them viruses, bacteria, and life force. And as the terrain changes, they morph and they change in order to help the body be as healthy as it can. So my question really is this, Dr. Jasek, if you kill off bacteria in the body by using antibiotics and all these different toxins, aren't we killing off that thing that we will need to heal? Because if these entities are basically just changing their structure on the inside to help manifest health, and then we kill them as they're trying to, and they go back the other way, because pleomorphism suggests that it goes one way towards the negative. If, I mean, it's going one way, they're changing if there's toxins, if there's cancer, if there's things in the body. But as they heal, they're going to go back the other way and morph back into their other forms.
So it's like you're they killing off these bacteria. It's like you're killing off your life force,
That's
because
what I
then
think.
they can't go back. So, and it makes sense. And what we see, pets that are just given repeated rounds of pharmaceuticals, the anti-drugs, the anti-bacterial antibiotics, antivirals, anti-diarrheals, anti-everything. And you're killing off these microorganisms that are actually there to help. Well, then there's nothing to go back to. You're just wiping out the life force in the body, basically. And there's no way that body can heal. It's like, I see cancer patients, and cancer is just like an advanced form of this. Biggleson say cancer is mold. It's like your body's literally decaying while it's still alive. And to me, that just made so much sense because I mean, I have removed tumors, in my earlier days, and I was doing more surgery and stuff. And that's just what they're like. They're just like friable. They're not normal tissue. And they said mold, like, yeah, like that's exactly what it's like. Just this yucky, mushy, disintegrating tissue, but that can grow, rampantly. So that's like, that's like an end stage. And now we just get to the point where the body just can't get ahead of that sometimes. But like with chemotherapy, I see patients, they start chemo, say for lymphoma, because unfortunately there's just so much lymphoma, which I think is just advanced inflammation in the body. But they go on chemo, and chemo, it's like, oh, well, it's working because boom, shrinks those lymph nodes right away. And the pet will feel better because the node size is down, the nodes are not as painful. But it always comes back. There's just no way you can stop chemo and that cancer doesn't come back. And it's much less treatable. So to me, it's like, yeah, we've just wiped out that body's life force. We've wiped out its natural ability to heal in the short term. We see a reduction in symptoms. And to the oncologist, that's a successful treatment. They'll tell people, well, we'll give you 6 months with your pet if we do chemo. And maybe they'll say, if you don't do chemo, maybe you have 3 months. So people will spend all this money at the end of 6 months. I mean, it's like the oncologist will say, yeah, it'll probably come back when we're done. Like, so what are you even doing the treatments for? Your pet's miserable, they're sick. They don't handle chemo. Oncologists will say, oh, dogs aren't as affected by chemo. Yeah, they are. They get really sick with it. So they have this miserable quality of life. And then the cancer is just going to come back and kill them anyway because you've wiped out their life force. So when I relate with like the Bigglesons are saying to what I actually see in practice, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think we still need to drill deeper and get to really what the root causes are. I think we're still figuring that out because even with the natural treatments, when those are stopped, I see a lot of cancers come back. So we're never really eliminating them from the body. So what do we have to do? Like, what are the missing pieces of that puzzle? And one of the things they talk about is structure, the importance of a properly aligned spine, that's a big part of it. Cranial sacral work, making sure that the bones in the body are properly aligned and that the energy pathways are open. So, adjustments like chiropractic or osteopathic adjustments and acupuncture to help open up those energy pathways. And if people were maybe doing more of that sort of thing on a regular basis, maybe we'd even be preventing some of these cancers because we'd be keeping the body healthier.
Yeah. And the energy that's in the home, the fear that's in the home, that sort of thing. And we're learning a lot more about that as well, trying to understand that, how that works. But I do see that. And we have to get our fear level down, right? You say the word cancer and everybody just goes, ah, certain death. Well, not necessarily, right? There are people who have done remarkable by just saying, no, that's not happening. I'm not going to do the poisons. I'm going to do something else. I recently was talking with my hairdresser, and she was saying that there was a client whose husband got a stage 4, whatever that is, they stage them, diagnosis. And they said, you have 6 months to live, but we can do chemo. And he said, well, why the heck would I do chemo if I'm going to die in 6 months? That doesn't make sense. So he said, no, changed his lifestyle, changed some things, and he reached the 8 month mark, and I think he's 6 months past the 8 month mark when he's supposed to die, and he's gone back and they've said, oh, it's in remission. Right. So they don't know everything. These right. doctors, right?
Right.
But if we, and the Bickelsons say this, if you get a diagnosis, most people will die by that time, yeah. right? Yeah. Because they've implanted the time in your head. Mm-hmm. They've yeah. implanted it. And the body just goes, okay.
And be careful, you know, too, with the doom and gloom prognoses coming from the conventional vets, because I hear this all the time too. I think sometimes one of the best things I do for my clients, we have a consult, is they have hope. And I have people tell me that a lot. They're like, oh my gosh, like, thank you so much, because we didn't have any hope before. Now we've got hope, and there's things we can do, you know? So there's things we can do to be proactive, to help support their pet. And I always tell people, I can't predict outcomes. I don't know what your pet's body is capable of doing, but I do think there's always hope. And I think that just raises the energy in the situation. So they're not just sitting in fear. But most people, unfortunately, I think it's very tragic. They'll get a cancer diagnosis and the vets just don't even want to touch it. Just go home and, you know, your pet will probably be dead in 3 months, you know, make your arrangements, spend time with your pet, you know, because they're just going to die. There's nothing we can do. Or they can go to oncologists and then do chemo and radiation and all that. So people that don't want to do the conventional, like, they're just left with no hope and no options. I mean, they don't even talk about diet or anything. You know, they would say diet doesn't even matter. Even the oncologists say diet doesn't matter. I mean, how can it not matter? I mean, if people are going to do just one thing, get the pet on a species appropriate diet, like we talk about. If you only did that, I think you'd, and stop poisoning them with the vaccines and other pharmaceuticals, I think you'd go a long, long way to stabilizing them, even with a cancer diagnosis. And don't over supplement. This drives me crazy too, because I think people sometimes, you know, we read labels. I mean, I spend a lot of my consultation time. Probably another thing that tires me out during my consults is going through supplement labels.
Right.
And some of you take, I say a pet's on 10 supplements, and each one of those supplements might have 8 or 10 ingredients. You're giving that body a lot to process. And so, like you were saying, for the body to heal, it needs the energy to approach that. And if they go into too much of a healing crisis, they might not get through that. So not only do we not want to be giving them a bunch of pharmaceuticals, but we don't want them to be spending energy processing all of these supplements. And some of the supplements might not be bad or harmful, but they're just overworking the body. I've seen pets, like, you know, the kitty we were talking about with the elevated kidney values. Well, people will go out and get all these supplements. Now, cats, usually not so much, because you can get just so much into a cat and they're like, nope, done. They go on strike, they quit eating. But dogs, they're eating more food. You know, people will throw all these supplements in. They spend a lot of money doing it. And I think it's all for nothing. If we were really drilling down, getting to the root cause, creating the basics, you know, the good nutrition, and reducing toxicity, I think the pets would be way better off. And then maybe some very targeted supplementation. I mean, I use Chinese herbs. We do some mistletoe. I recommend ozone, you know, things like that specific to what's going on. But there's just so much available online. There's other holistic vets that are, you know, promoting lots of supplements. And I think that's not the best thing for people, because people then go out and they just want to try everything that seems like it might be a fit. And I think, I don't know, anymore for a vet to have an online store with all these supplements that people can just go buy on their own, I think is a disservice, because I think people just keep reaching for that next thing. And then they end up overwhelming the pet's body with all these supplements. And as far as I spend half my consultation time going through supplement lists and taking pets off of them, you know, because they don't need them.
Right. And again, I think it's a journey. And certainly even with, you know, the human cancer side, right? We want to, instead of learning how to remove the blocks to the flow, right? And going to an osteopath, something like that, getting the blood looked at, seeing what the blood is really, and not all live blood analysis are the same, guys. This is why we're working with the Bigglesons. They've been doing it the longest and really, you know, have a wealth of information. And so we're working with them right now to see if we can also incorporate the pets. And so that's going to be something exciting that Dr. Jasek is on the forefront of. But again, we have to get to the root cause. And many times we don't know what the root cause is. But that's why we're going down this path and we're going to help you because we're going to help ourselves. We're looking for that root cause too. And we've got a lot of good information. But you know what, Dr. Jasek, I want to address this issue on vaccines and the mRNA vaccines in beef. Okay, because I get this question a lot. Because there's a narrative out there, right? And you guys have to understand that part of the narrative that's going on right now, even with the H1N1, this bird flu thing that's going on, right? These are scare tactics, and they have far-reaching tentacles, right? They can move the industry, just like we saw with Dr. Lisa Freeman, how she moved the industry. Hills had five times their revenue after the scandemic on this dilated cardiomyopathy. So you have to understand that the industry moves when you put scary information out there. So people want to know about the mRNA vaccines in cattle. So I went to the agricultural industry and got this information. So I want to share it with you. Here's what it says. There are no current mRNA vaccines licensed for use in beef cattle in the United States. Cattle farmers and ranchers do vaccinate cattle to treat and prevent many diseases, but presently, none of these vaccines include mRNA technology. They go on to say no vaccines currently licensed in the U.S. for administration to cattle were produced using mRNA technology. And regardless of the vaccine technology, the components of vaccines are digested or broken down by immune cells after they are given. So the components do not persist in animal tissues for long periods of time. Following the withdrawal times on vaccine labels helps to ensure that meat from vaccinated animals is safe to consume. So you can put a narrative out there. Everybody's talking about mRNA technology, and it's a big fear thing, right? But there are no current mRNA vaccines licensed for use in beef cattle in the United States. So I wanted to pass that on.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did not know that because I thought that they were starting to use them, or unless they are and they're just not licensed, but.
Right. But even that, Dr. Jasek, I mean, I would like to, you know what? I would love to see, I don't know how we would do this, but how, if we have somebody like the Bigglesons that can actually look at blood, have been looking at blood, I would love to see what the blood says. Okay, this is very different, guys, than you going and getting a blood test at your local veterinarian or at your doctor. Okay, this is totally different. You can go over to BigglesonAcademy.com, take a look at what we're talking about, BigglesonAcademy.com. But I would love to see what the blood says before and after a vaccine.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Before and after a rabies vaccine. One of the things that I would love to get them back on with us again is they talk about the fallacy of Lyme disease, that Lyme disease is not coming from, you know, this tick, right? Now, if you dispel that and you really show that, Dr. Jasek, and then we look at rabies and we look at the canine influenza, oh my gosh. You would totally disrupt the whole vaccine industry for pets across the board.
Oh my gosh, we might find out it's just all been a lie.
Oh no, come on now. You know what I'm saying? But the fear, it's again the fear. I don't care if it's the fear that you've got a diagnosis or your pet has a diagnosis. Fear will, you've said it before on the podcast, totally take your thinking brain out. You won't be open to other information, and you will just be doing that knee-jerk reaction. So, you know, Dr. Jasek, really, we need to put together a whole mindset course, right? A course on how to bring that fear down from our own experience. You've dealt with cancer diagnosis in your family. I have. We see people all the time with cancer diagnosis with their dogs. So I think we have a lot that we can help people with.
Yeah. And another thing I see too that I think is important for people to recognize is identifying with the diagnosis. And I don't know what it is about Lyme, but people just, boy, once there's like a Lyme diagnosis, people, whether it's themselves or their pet, and oftentimes if the pets had the diagnosis, the humans had the diagnosis too. So is that similar exposure, or we just have that energy in the household? But don't identify with the diagnosis. We're not treating diagnoses. And I say this to people. People say, do you treat Lyme disease? I said, no, I treat pets. And I will treat how your pet is presenting to me. I don't do a specific treatment for Lyme disease. I'm going to be doing the same things to help improve the terrain of the pet. So whatever's going on with the pet, they're going to be healthier. Plus, I don't trust these tests, these diagnostic tests. I don't trust any of them anymore. After what we've learned in all the bogus like COVID testing, I don't trust that these tests are giving us any kind of valid information, that they're really true. And then people just get locked into that, and the pets get put on antibiotics, long-term antibiotics. Well, then they do get sick. And then what happens? They come off the antibiotics and they're sick. Oh, it's the Lyme disease coming back. No, it's because you're ruining their bodies, you know, with the antibiotics, and then they get in these vicious cycles, and it's more symptomatic drugs. So don't get hung up on the diagnosis, even if it's cancer. Don't get hung up on whether it's T zone or B cell or stage three or however they want to name it. It's just words, and it scares you. Don't get hung up on that. We got to treat the pet, treat the terrain, you know, eliminate toxins, do the right nutrition. We're doing all those same things no matter what the diagnosis is. So don't get hung up on the diagnosis. And then what happens? Then you go Google the diagnosis, right? And then you get more and more scary. And Google is like a big fear generator. So you just go out there and you Google that diagnosis, then you hear more and more and more scary information. If you just focused on your pet, and what's your real goal? Like, my goal is I want my patients to live the best quality of life possible, you know, period, the end. We create a healthy lifestyle. We support the terrain. If you just focus on this diagnosis, and we got to go in there and we got to be killing something, we got to kill the, you know, the Lyme disease, we got to kill the cancer, you're just putting a lot of negative energy into the situation, and you're going to be reaching for a lot of drugs that aren't going to be healthy for your pet. If you have that attitude. You know, I had a client, new cancer client last week, and she's like, but what if I just did like just a couple doses of chemo just to get in there, just knock this thing down? It's like, well, I can't, you know, I can't tell you what to do, but I would not recommend it, because we're trying to build up the pet's body and support the terrain, and you're going to knock it down. So you're just going to make our stuff take way longer to work, maybe even prevent it from working. And again, you got to not be focusing on attacking. Use what's showing up, that tumor or whatever's showing up in the pet. A lot of Lyme disease patients have lameness. They're sore. You know, maybe we need to look at other structural issues, like why that lameness is showing up, and not just blaming it on this supposed organism that comes. And Lyme's, you know, been debunked by people too. Dr. Sam Bailey had a good video out on Lyme, and how that doesn't even, you know, there's no proof that that organism, that Lyme disease is even a real thing. It's a test. It's a diagnosis of the testing. Like, COVID became a pandemic of the testing. What we were treating cases, we were treating positive test results. And I think that's really what what Lyme disease comes down to. So focus on the pet and how's your pet doing? And what do we need to do to help your pet live a good quality of life and focus less on the diagnosis? And I think we'll get a lot further.
Right. I wanted to ask you, speaking of heart problems in pets, recently you did have a patient that had been doing an all vegan diet for their pet. And what did you see?
Vegan. Well, it came to us as, primarily because it was a cancer patient. They had already, were committed to making the shift. They were vegan themselves and, decided they thought that would be appropriate, nutrition for their pet. But the pet also had an enlarged heart, and they were going to go do get an echocardiogram done, which I think is a good idea. An echo is just an ultrasound of the heart. So it tells us like what's going on, like functionally, like are the valves not working right, or is the heart able to do its job? I think there can be some good information from that imaging. It's not invasive, but I also told them that I've definitely seen pets that when they switch from a vegan diet in particular, even a like just a, any old kibble diet, onto a species appropriate meat-based diet, that heart conditions will improve because we're giving the heart proper nutrition. And that, the heart's a muscle and it can heal just like our sore muscles can heal. Yeah, there's some heart conditions that are progressive that don't tend to heal as well, but I have definitely seen proper nutrition change these things around, or at least improve it to the point that it's, not an issue for, for pets. But I've seen pets can live with mild heart murmurs and things like that and do just fine.
I had a dachshund who started me on this journey, 20, 24 years, almost 25 years ago. And he had a, as they said, a stage four heart murmur. Well, Doc lived to 17 with
Yeah,
that. He was
they
just
live longer.
fine, right?
Yeah.
I don't even know if he actually had it, but that's what they said. And I was like, well, okay, I'm not going to do, pharmaceuticals, and we're going to do all of the clean stuff that we can. And yeah, Doc did great. I mean, he was, 17 as a dachshund. I do believe that these dogs should be and can be living a lot longer. That doesn't mean that they're going to be here with us forever, unfortunately, because, they're just not made to live that as long as a human. I wish that would be nice. But anyway, so I'm learning Dr. Jasek, and I think that we all get these lessons in our life. I'm learning not to one, get hung up on a diagnosis, right? And I just don't know. It's so worrisome to me that people that are in that system, right? They're just hung up in that system where we're going in every year for a wellness exam. We're going in and getting those yearly supposedly preventatives. That's a tough one for people to get out of and snap out of. But that's what our goal is, to try to help you help your pets so that you don't have to do that. And that comes from experience. That comes from working with people that you trust. But I do think that Dr. Jasek, it has to be something that the pet parents experience on their own. Okay, so for me, I'm not worried about Lyme disease. I'm not worried about rabies. I'm not worried about, flea and tick and my dog getting heartworms. So I don't do that stuff. Right? I don't do it. And my thinking is, you keep the body as healthy as possible, so that it is strong when it needs extra things, right? If we're starting, people come to you sometimes, Dr. Jasek, way behind the eight ball, way behind the eight ball. And then they can have a narrative that says, well, this doesn't work, or raw diets don't work, or any. Well, it's not that they don't work, but I heard this analogy, from somebody yesterday, and they were saying it's like swimming from the shore. Sometimes you've swum, you swam so far out there that you don't have the energy to get back.
Yeah, right. That's a good analogy.
And so you have to do these things in the beginning, like with a puppy, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if and you guys want
to, I think need to take the, or be accountable to educate yourself. You have to, you can't just be looking for somebody to tell you what to do. You have to be educated, and then you have to look at your pet and decide what's best for your pet, because you know your pet better than anybody. And with the right education, there's a lot you can do to help your pet, even with things like cancer. Even, you know, you don't need somebody to just tell you what to do. There's no magic bullet out there anyway. You know, if you're going to one practitioner, another, looking for that one thing that's going to take care of the cancer, it doesn't work that way. You have to be supporting the whole body. And there's many things that that you can do to do that. But it's up to you to learn to be educated and be committed to doing it. There's not just a magic pill, you know, somebody's going to prescribe and make that go away. It's like, what's the, you know, magic vitamin I can take and I can eat at McDonald's and I'll still be healthy. You know, it's a lifestyle, and it's for people to be healthy. It's a lifestyle, and it's the same for the pets.
And, you know, we have to be careful about what we identify sick as, right, Dr. Jasek? So I get this a lot. This made my dog sick. Well, okay. What were they doing? Well, their poops were runny and they were, you know, throwing up their food. How many times did they throw up their food? Was it undigested food? What else is going into the, there's so many factors, but sick to me doesn't look like that, right? If the poops are slightly runny, okay, maybe that blend doesn't work. Maybe something else. I don't know, but sick to me, Dr. Jasek, means I'm shooting out, you know, red, bloody diarrhea in a watery stool, you know, for mm-hmm. days. And my dog's not eating and not drinking water. Mm-hmm. And it has a fever and it's lethargic. That looks sick to me.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But even that could still be, you know, a detox. The body's healing from something, trying to eliminate something. You know, it could still be part of the healing process, even though there's more symptoms. But the knee jerk and what conventional medicine has told us is we can't have symptoms. That's bad. We have to stop that. We have to stop the fever instead of supporting the body through the healing. But, you know, generations ago, what'd you get when you're sick? Got chicken soup. You know, they didn't have a bunch of medicines to give you. And what's chicken soup is, you know, easy to digest nutrition, lots of natural herbs, aromatic herbs, all those things that really help nourish and heal the body, made with love from grandma.
That's, you know, right.
That's how you got better. It's like the body is going to get better anyway, but you just do things like that to help support, and you rest, you know, like, and I've been guilty of this, like, you know, you get symptoms and you just keep going and pushing through. But maybe it's just a sign, hey, you know, you need to rest. You need to take a step back when your pet has symptoms. Maybe you just have to look at, okay, how can I improve the terrain? You know, Rex had just nasty poops for a while when I got him. Got better this morning. He had loose poops. I'm like, well, let's see. I did give him a freeze-dried duck wing that I had in the freezer, and he found a dead turtle. So, you
a
know,
dead
like
turtle.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. We have turtles here.
Did he eat the head and the feet, or what did he eat?
When we came back from our walk, because we were just walking the property and he was loose and he had something in his mouth, and I'm like, what do you have in your mouth? And it was like a piece of the turtle shell. So it's like, yeah, let's not take the turtle shell. Let's just let the turtle rest in peace. So, you know, I don't know. Is he detoxing? I don't know, but he's acting fine, so I'm not worried about it. By tomorrow, his poops will probably, you know, probably be fine. I think probably he had such, you know, nasty diarrhea there for a while that his gut might be a little vulnerable. So the freeze-dried duck wing was something different. So maybe, you know, we have to ease into things maybe a little bit more, or maybe it's completely unrelated. Like, I don't know, but bottom line is he's acting fine, eating, acting perfectly normal. So I'm not concerned about it. I'm not gonna quote unquote treat it. I'm gonna give it a day or two and his body will probably figure it out. I mean, that's the way I look at it. You know, you can have soft poops for a couple of days, and if they're acting fine, you know, if they're not eating, if they don't stay, I mean, probably the biggest thing in a scenario like that is hydration. If they're not drinking and they can't stay hydrated, that's a problem because the body cannot heal if it's not hydrated. It could go a couple of days without eating, but they really need to stay hydrated. You know, that's a biggie for the, you know, for the body. But as long as he's eating and drinking, I just don't worry about it.
Well, speaking of eating, so my neighbor, her dog stopped eating about 3 months ago. And she's still outside wagging her tail, barking.
And she hasn't eaten in 3 months.
Well, she says she hasn't eaten enough to speak of. And now, at one time she said, well, I've given her ice cream, I've given her everything, you know, and she just doesn't want anything. So I don't know what the dog is surviving on. But she had asked me many months ago, like the vet had said, well, we'll come out and put her down. And I said, is she ready to be put down? I mean, she'll let you know when she's ready. And the
Is this an
dog,
older dog? Is it an older dog?
11,
Yeah, that's not that old.
right? But you know, they had told her, your dog has been exposed to Ehrlichia. This is Lyme disease, another Lyme disease, because the dog was limping on the front foot,
Oh, yeah.
right? And there was calcium, you know, in the blood, and blah blah blah. And so she said, well, if it's cancer, I'm not going to do anything any different, because she had been feeding this dog raw. Maybe a year. You know, it was all the other standard stuff, all the vaccines, all the other stuff prior to a year of getting on raw. But she, the vet wanted to put her on doxycycline just because, from an antibody test that we know that is insignificant and not specific, that may or may not be true. And I don't know if she did it or not, but my whole point is this: the dog is still alive. And I'll drive by and I see her out there. She's just sitting out there wagging her tail, barking with the other dog.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a dog that's ready to die.
I know. I was like, but so my whole point about this is, if your dog misses a couple of meals, it really doesn't matter, because this dog is not really hardly eating, and it's 3 months later.
Sometimes that's what they need. Sometimes they just know they need to fast. They got an upset stomach. The best thing to do is to fast and not, you know, not eat anything for a meal or two, and then they're fine.
Yeah. Well, listen, we're learning a lot of new things. Dr. Jasek is definitely somebody you want to have on your team, whether that is for a nutrition consultation, whether that is a cancer diagnosis, whether that is because you have a new puppy and you want to know how to build up their health, keep them healthy, so that when, you know, maybe there's an issue that they can get through it. Right? We don't want to start behind the eight ball. So you want to have Dr. Jasek on your team, a true holistic vet, not a faux holistic vet that's going to hang out a shingle and then give you Apoquil. And by the way, Dr. Jasek, I am really understanding now why suppressive medicine ends up with cancer. It's that tree log in the river. We just suppressed. We
You're not
suppress the system.
allowing, you're stopping the healing process in the body. And it's the process is not going away. It's just the symptoms going away. So your dog's not keeping you up at night itching if you do something like Apoquil, but the whole reason that the dog was itching in the first place is just going deeper in the body and it'll show up as something like cancer.
And I think that we're really going to bring to the forefront more about allergies, more about itching, more as we are learning more and we have some great resources. So,
you know, another thing we should dive into sometime too is autoimmune disease, which the Biggleson say that's what doctors call something that they don't know what it is. They just call it autoimmune. They said there's no way the body would attack itself. So I'm curious to learn more about that from them. But I think because that's another pretty common thing. And what happens? How do you treat it? Immunosuppressive drugs. So what are you doing? The body's sick. It's presenting with symptoms and we're suppressing the process. So we're not allowing the body to heal. So I think we need a whole new approach there too.
Right, right. Yes, I was just hearing about that on the New German Medicine as well. They say, we don't call it an immune system. What are they? But I can't remember off the top of my head what they call it. Something like, sort of like a balancing system. They don't call it an immune system. They say it's the body's balancing. That's not the word. I'll go back and listen. But but they don't call it that either. And these are research. This is research that's been going on for a long time. And again, back to the whole one of the reasons that I thought that the interview I did yesterday was so important is because I want our pet parents to start seeing how information can be skewed, suppressed, turned around when it's not even valid. And yet we take that information and think it is gospel. And when we think that, then we go in that direction and we do something. And Dr. Jacek, we're banging our heads against the wall. Things are not changing for the better with these type of protocols for our pets. And yet we keep doing it. Right. And so it's very important that we get the brain start to understand how we can be fooled, how information can be skewed simply for a financial gain. And that is something that is so important about that interview I did, because he really shows this was all money motivated. Hills was losing market share and they had the people in the right places to be able to take that information, put it into our veterinary communities, and move the pet parents to a different food.
And how, I mean, just how evil is that? That, okay, they're losing market share, maybe because they have inferior products, you know, they don't have good products. So instead of creating better products, really focusing on, you know, what would be healthy products for the pets, they don't do that. They just basically change their marketing game is what this is, really just a very creative form of marketing, but just very evil. They just changed the narrative. They got it out into the vets, and then they got the vets preaching this. So they didn't even have to do it. They just got the veterinary profession on board preaching this. People want to trust their veterinarians. They want to believe that they're a trusted health professional. And unfortunately, I wouldn't recommend doing that anymore. At least be thinking critically about what you hear. But they just got all the vets, and then they put it out in the CE meetings and everything. You know, who do you think teaches the nutrition at these continuing education meetings? It's Hills and Royal Canin and these big companies making these foods. So then they can just teach the vets. I can totally see this, how this unfolded, but just so evil that that's the direction they take.
Evil genius.
Yeah.
Because he said, yeah, it's definitely brilliant. Evil, but it's brilliant.
It's a brilliant, you know, marketing plan. Totally.
Great marketing plan, just like the Rockefellers, right? So the Rockefeller suppressed all of the homeopathic, all of the natural ways, all of the plant medicine, all of the herbs, suppressed all that.
But they had a live-in homeopath.
Right.
They didn't do the stuff that they were promoting. They were just making money on it. They still practiced homeopathy. They had their own personal homeopathic practitioner. They were just promoting it for money. It truly is evil.
Evil genius.
Evil genius.
So anyway, we
On
want you to,
that cheery note,
on that cheery note, we want you guys to get out there and have a great day.
go
But
make a difference. Go learn
right?
something about your pet. Go
Right?
take your pet for a walk. Spend some time in nature with your pet. I
Right.
think that'd be a good thing. Find some joy with your pet. That's a good
Right.
idea.
Right. All right, everybody, get over to ahavet.com, ahavet.com. Dr. Jacek is somebody you want on your pet health team. And I do think that that will extend into your own health, right? Because when we look at our pets and we look at ourselves, or vice versa, we look at ourselves and we look at our pets, we're all in this symbiotic relationship. We're all in the same energy flow. And a lot of times, people's health, Dr. Jacek, gets better when they start understanding about their pets and vice versa. So you're doing great work out there. And I think, again, you guys need to get over to ahavet.com. Make sure you get your dogs on a species appropriate diet. Refer your friends over to us, right? Don't tell them their dog's fat. But if you've got a dog that has got the itchies, it's got bad breath, it's got all sorts of digestive poop problems, everything, just get over to rawdogfoodandcompany.com. We'll get you situated. We'll help you out. Because here at Raw Dog Food and Company, your pet's health is our business. And what, Dr. Jacek?
Friends, don't let friends feed kibble. Yeah.
That's right, y'all. Okay. We'll see you soon, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, snap. Snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.